Earlier today, a committee at the D.C. Council voted 3-2 to pass a quote-unquote death with dignity bill. It now heads to the full council. By the end of the year, they'll be voting on it. And this, of course, would allow for physician-assisted suicide in the District of Columbia. Joining us right now to discuss the ramifications of this policy, Samantha Crane. She's the Director of Public Policy at the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for inviting me.
You know, I read quite a bit about the proponents for this bill, and I just want, you know, full disclosure. I have two children with disabilities, one with autism, one with cerebral palsy. And I look at some of the reasons why people would want physician-assisted suicide. I see things like less able to engage in activities, loss of dignity, loss of control of bodily functions, feeling like a burden. My gosh, that's some pretty loose language that could be interpreted to a lot of people with disabilities that aren't necessarily terminally ill. Am I reading this wrong?
Oh, you're exactly right. And I think that gets to the heart of what a lot of people with disabilities think when they're presented with these so-called aid in dying or physician-assisted suicide bills.
So what? Let me ask it this way. If somebody is told that they're going to die within 6 months and it's going to be painful, why shouldn't they be able to end their life peacefully?
So what we know is, based on the Oregon data that has been collected in cases where people have used the law in Oregon, is that it's very difficult to know that someone is going to pass away within the next 6 months. Many people who are prescribed the lethal dose in Oregon live for another 500 days or more before actually taking the lethal dose. And those were just people who did take the lethal dose. We don't know about the people who were prescribed the dose, didn't take it, and might have lived for many years more. Unfortunately, when someone does use the physician-assisted suicide laws, it's very difficult to tell how much longer they might have lived.
Sure.
The disability community is very full of a lot of people who were given extremely poor prognoses and outlived them for many years.
The bill, of course, or the law, I should say, in Oregon has been in effect for 9 years now this month. And what have the long-term ramifications been? That's the great thing about living in the United States. You've got 50 different states that can pass things like this, and we can actually see the fallout.
Unfortunately, we don't have very good data being kept in Oregon. We'll see a lot of data on things like the amount of time that someone waited before taking the medication. But the Oregon Department of Health has said that they don't have the authority to keep track of suspected abuses of the law. So there have been cases, for example, in which a nurse administered lethal drugs to an individual without following any of the law's safeguards, said that she was trying to use the physician-assisted suicide laws. And even though she didn't follow any of the safeguards, that kind of incident is not kept in Oregon's data, and we only know about it because it made the news.
Well, again, you know, setting aside the terminally ill aspect of this, if somebody is in great pain, if somebody does have serious discomfort in their life and they don't want to live their life anymore, why shouldn't they be able to end their life?
Well, what we're seeing is a bit of a double standard in how we approach depression. A lot of people who have been given a terminal diagnosis, especially if they're being placed in an institutional environment, like a hospital where they're divorced from their family and friends, that can be a very depressing time. And when people say that they want to end their life, it's often, as you said, because people feel like a burden, they can't do the things they used to do anymore. Those are things that could be addressed if people had the right services and supports and healthcare. But unfortunately, that is not something that has to be investigated and addressed before someone takes advantage of these types of laws.
We're speaking with Samantha Crane. She is the Director of Public Policy for the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. And let's bring it down to that aspect. You know, I'm looking at the stats out of Oregon, and the top five reasons for getting this prescription. None of them have anything to do with suffering pain. You know, the number one reason that the prescription was prescribed for somebody was loss of autonomy. How does that translate to the disabled community, and what is the greater concern? Is there a worry that there's a larger agenda here?
There is a worry, and it doesn't have to be an intentional agenda. It doesn't have to be a conspiracy, but there is a worry that this kind of viewpoint that if someone is not autonomous, their life is not worth living, you know, that can both feed into people using assisted suicide laws, but it can also feed into denial of life-saving health care. We have seen a very disturbing trend of people with developmental disabilities, especially, who have been denied life-saving organ transplants. They've been denied routine life-saving health care, such as antibiotics, with the assumption that because they aren't autonomous, because they need a lot of help to survive, their life is just not as worth living as other people. And as a person who is involved in developmental disabilities advocacy, those are the cases that I run into a lot. But we also have colleagues in physical disability advocacy communities who say that they've run into exactly the same concerns and exactly the same patterns. We really need to respond to this culture of an attitude that people's lives aren't worth living because they can't do all of the same things as other people.
Yeah.
And really respond to it. And the other concern is, you know, many people would be able to do a lot of the things they want to do if they got the right services and supports in the community. But unfortunately, those services and supports aren't being funded. So we have a very serious concern that if people have no services and supports, no way of living a good life, and then they're offered aid in dying, then a lot of people will die who really might not have made that same choice.
Yeah.
And they had all of the other options.
Especially, even the name of the law, in my mind, is discordant. This whole death with dignity suggestion, it lays the predicate that if one is a quote-unquote burden to others, if one does require assistance, if one does have a disability and isn't able to get through what's considered a typical life without having some sort of assistance from others, that in some way that's undignified.
That is a very serious concern of ours. And many people do feel that they're treated as if their lives aren't dignified, that their lives aren't worth the same as other people.
We will watch this. We have to leave it there. There's so many more other questions, but this, like I said, is going to the full council before the end of the year, and I'm sure that we'll have you back to talk about it. Especially, I'm curious how this meshes with the Americans with Disabilities Act, but we'll have to leave it there.
We could talk forever
I'm
about
sure.
That.
Samantha Thank Crane, you. Director of Public Policy for Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.